And welcome to Dakota Midday for this Wednesday. I'm Kara Hetland sitting in today for Carl Gerke, and we're going to spend the entire hour talking about the primary election in South Dakota. We're going to discuss the results and the races as they stand now, and we're also hear from some of the candidates. So joining us today for the hour are our political junkies, Denise Ross, who is a web editor for the Mitchell Daily Republic. Denise, thanks for being here.
Good to be here, Kara.
Also joining us, David Montgomery, the political reporter for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. David, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be on.
And also we have Pam Caravu, who's a political science professor at Black Hills State University, who's going to help us make sense of it all. So, Professor Caravu, thanks for being with us.
I'm looking forward to it.
So let's start. And David Montgomery, any surprises?
To me, I was a little bit surprised that Susan Wismer won the Democratic primary. Joe Lowe had been the more active campaigner and had a more outgoing, personable style. And I thought that that might resonate. But Wismer won a convincing victory. It's hard to say sure exactly what contributed to it, but some of the things seem to have been her name recognition from her long time in the legislature, her status as a woman. Apparently, a lot of voters, especially female voters, resonated, liked the idea of the nominating the first woman for governor in South Dakota's history, and possibly the fact that she was a lifelong resident of South Dakota while Lowe had moved here 15 years ago from California.
Denise, any surprises for you?
I guess I would say the same thing that David said about the Democratic primary. I at least thought it would be a closer race than it was. You know, what I'm looking at is Dennis Dugard's 81%, 82% mm-hmm. victory, and Mike Rounds' 55, 56% victory. Now, granted, Rounds had more opponents running against him, but I think that shows you that some of the criticism against Rounds may be having an effect. You saw, you know, quite a few of the Republican voters voting for somebody other than the front runner in that Senate campaign.
Well, so that was really one of my first questions, and we'll let all three of you have a chance to chime in. I'm wondering, is this an indication that the Republican Party is split, is divided? Denise, go ahead. You go first.
You know, there's no question that there's some intense feeling out there, anti-establishment, Tea Party feeling, whatever you want to label it as. The question that we have of observers and that we don't know because we don't have the money to pay for all the polling and the focus grouping is how wide and how deep is that dissatisfaction? And I don't know that we have a much clearer picture of that after yesterday because of the lopsided results in the governor's race versus the more close race for the Senate candidate, whether that reflects the two candidates, whether that reflects people who, gosh, they really like Larry Roden or Stace Nelson because they were their legislators or they knew them, but they're going to turn around and vote for Mike Rounds in the fall without question. Or does that mean they're going to look to somebody like the independent, who's really a Republican, a very conservative Republican mm-hmm. from out here in Rapid City, Gordon Howie? Are they going to look to Larry Pressler, who maybe a lot of the older voters have voted for before and would be very comfortable voting for him again? He's running as an independent now. I think that still makes this a very interesting campaign as we head into the fall.
David?
Yeah, I mean, we had a pretty wild primary, and I think the general election has the potential to be even wilder. A lot depends on how much money and support the independent candidates are able to get. But certainly Rick Wyland is going to have the money to take it to Mike Rounds in a way that the Republican primary challengers never did. So the race could be heating up shortly here.
And Pam?
I agree with David's assessment. I was surprised by how little we heard from Mike Rounds during the primary. He was able to just step back, stay out of the fight, and kind of coast to a win. Although I agree with Denise that, you know, only earning 56% of the vote seems to be not exactly a ringing endorsement of Mike Rounds. And that's what I've been kind of looking at. You know, what happens when we have a candidate like Larry Pressler in a general election? What does that do to, you know, the competition between the Democrat and the Republican? It can get really interesting.
Okay, so we have some tape of the candidates, and so let's start for this first part of the program, and let's kind of hear from some of the candidates for the U.S. Senate, and we'll start with former Governor Mike Rounds and some of the things that he said last night in an interview. So we'll start.
And I know
we'll
you're looking forward to the general election in November, but I want to talk a little bit about that five-person race. You know, now that it's ended, does that divide the party at all? Is this a time for the party to come together? And if so, how do you reach out to those Republicans who didn't vote for you in the primary?
Look, anytime you have a lot of people that want the same job, you're going to have differing points of view. But the one thing that does unite the Republican Party is our principles are all the same. And those folks wanted the same job that I wanted. That doesn't make them bad people. It makes them desiring to make our country better. And that's the way that I approach it. So we look forward to working with them. We look forward to putting together the plans to unite the party. And I really think that we're well on our way already. I think we'll develop a good, solid team approach, and I think the Republican Party will stand very strong. That, along with independents and conservative Democrats, we're going to go a long ways towards changing Washington, D.C., because we want that South Dakota common sense to come through in D.C. We've got to take back the Senate. We've got to retire the majority leader, Harry Reid. We've got to eliminate Obamacare and replace it with something which is better, and we can do that step by step. And that's what all of us were talking about. We were talking consistently about an energy policy and not one that's going to cost American families $1,700 more a year like the president's proposing. Those are critical issues out there, and I think every one of us agreed on that. So we are bound by principle. We are bound by a common goal. The only thing that separated us was is we all wanted a job. We all wanted the same job. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with people wanting the same job in the political arena.
And how does one person go to Washington and try to change some of the dysfunction you're referring to?
I think you start out by setting an example. As a governor, you had to build a team. You had to work with other people. You stepped across the aisle when necessary to find areas of common agreement. And I think the same thing can happen in Washington, D.C. It's not going to be easier. It would have been done already. But I think we build a team that understands that the Senate right now is not working. It's not functional. And that's the reason why you need new leadership there. So we're looking forward to literally taking back the United States Senate and in doing so, setting a new focus, focusing on getting things done in a regular order of business in which people can start to believe in their elected officials again. Literally saying we will deliver. We will begin the process of balancing the budget. Heck, we're going to pass budgets. Those are the kinds of commitments that I want to get from the other members of the caucus and the other members of the Senate. I think they want the same thing. It's a matter of building the plans and executing on them.
Now that you've secured the Republican nomination, where does the campaign go?
We start out right away tomorrow. We send the message that we want to build the coalition, that there are differences between liberal Democrats who have been running Washington, D.C., and people in South Dakota that believe in common sense. Look, we had a great health care system in South Dakota. It could have been made even better, but Obamacare didn't do it. So we got to repeal and we've got to replace Obamacare. We've got to establish a national energy policy, and that does not mean adding $1,700 to every single family in America's energy bill like the president's proposing. I don't think the government should be getting into the winners and losers in the energy field. We should be looking at all types of energy. Wind energy should be promoted, but we still need to use coal. We've got lots of it. Let's make it clean, but let's use it. Let's use our petroleum. Let's pass the Keystone Pipeline. Those are areas in which myself and the competition, I think we're going to have some real good discussions because I don't think we agree on those. I want the Keystone Pipeline. I want to repeal and replace Obamacare. I want to pass a budget every single year, flat out. And, you know, along the way, I really disagree with the president when it comes to his total energy policy. And I think that means that most people in South Dakota are going to agree with my point of view.
Mike Rounds, the Republican nominee for United States Senator in November's general election, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity.
SDPB's Keely Bultina speaking with Mike Rounds last night after he was declared the Republican nominee. David Montgomery, are you hearing anything that we haven't really heard before?
Not particularly, and that's sort of telling. Mike Rounds has in many ways been in general election mode for quite some time. The most important thing you heard was a lot of talk about Washington, D.C. and the federal situation. Generally speaking, there's sort of two types of approaches to campaigns. Some people try to localize elections and make them about very local issues that don't have anything to do with Democrats and Republicans in Washington, D.C. And other candidates try to nationalize elections and say, well, this isn't about the local stuff. This is about whether you want, this is about the bigger issues of national policy. And you heard Mike Rounds talking a lot about national policy. And he even said as much to me last night when we talked that he expects to talk a lot about national, primarily about national issues in this campaign and not so much about local South Dakota issues, which is exactly what he should be doing given the unpopularity of Barack Obama here in South Dakota.
Professor Caribou, I am wondering, given with this open Senate seat, with Senator Johnson retiring, what opportunity does this give two candidates from any party to bring up some national issues that we may not be addressing right now?
I think it's really interesting. I'm kind of a big data kind of person. I like numbers, and I've been following a couple of the the different websites out there that use polling numbers and fundamentals to try to predict whether Republicans will get control of the Senate or whether Democrats will try to retain or be able to retain control. And you know, the stuff that I've been looking at shows about a 90% chance that that Republicans will win Tim Johnson's seat in the fall. However, that said, depending on who you look at, the numbers are showing only a 1 in 3 chance that Republicans will take control of the Senate, or about a 50-50 chance that Republicans will take control of the Senate in the fall. So I think it's interesting. As far as talking about national policy, it seems like that's a smart thing to do in an off-year election, especially when you have a president that's unpopular in a state. And it also, I think, fits the mood of the country at this time.
You know, years ago, I remember that, you know, political science, political junkies would always describe South Dakota as the place where you send your conservative to lead the state, the governor, and your liberals to Washington to bring home the money. Are we seeing that change?
I think we are, because bringing home the money is a lot harder to do now. Mm-hmm. We've seen cuts in earmark spending, and so it doesn't make sense to support that model if there isn't any money to bring home to the state. Mm-hmm. Although South Dakota certainly does do that. When we look at how much money is brought to the state, we certainly get more money coming into the state than we send out of the state.
Mm-hmm. Denise?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you saw the earmarks go away, when Congress eliminated their earmarks, the whole idea of bringing home the bacon
disappeared.
You know, the funny thing about that is, and the people who supported the earmarks will tell you this, including Tim Johnson and his staff, is that that money is still going to get spent. That money is in the budget. Now it's just the bureaucrats in the executive branch who are going to decide where it goes versus the politicians in the legislative branch who are going to sort of horse trade amongst themselves and spread the wealth around a little bit, and they can prioritize their own projects in their own districts and states. But you definitely saw that shift, that whole dynamic where you really look to your congressmen and your senators to fund some special pet projects in your district that you couldn't get funded in other ways. And you're seeing that really affecting like the Lewis and Clark water pipeline, I think. That's been a struggle for mm-hmm. funding, and I think that just made that hardship even greater for the people who were trying to get that pipeline built.
So let's stay on the topic of money. And are we going to see a lot of big money coming into this race, given that there's a chance that it could assist in the change of power in the Senate?
You know, that is a good question. I think that's a real question for Rick Weiland as the Democrat, mm-hmm. which is a little bit. I mean, he's put himself in the corner because right. he's running against big money. Of course, he's was a longtime staffer for Tom Daschle, who has ties to a lot of big donors. And so is Rick Weiland. And he said, I'm not going to unilaterally disarm if Mike Rounds is going to go out and raise big money, which he said he's going to do and has done. And we got there's an email that went out this morning from Weiland supporters talking about the Koch brothers, who are sort of infamous in, amongst political observers for being really big conservative funders and PAC donors and all kinds of things. So they're trying to tie the Koch brothers to Mike Rounds. and make that an issue for the campaign. And so the question for Rick Weiland is now, do you try and show Mike Rounds as vulnerable with the 55-56% turnout or result that he got? Do you try and take that to bigger donors, or do you try and maybe do what Barack Obama did in 2008 and raise money through the internet and get the small donors? And I think that's a real question, and I'm guessing that Rick Weiland's campaign has already probably sat around the table and talked this one out.
Well, we talked to Rick Weiland earlier today, and here's what he's saying, that he's hoping the campaign is going to go focus on the issues and not just big money.
I guess I'm excited to get this next part of the campaign underway, and I'm really hoping that I get an opportunity to discuss issues with Mike and the other candidates in front of the voters of South Dakota. Big money ads, I guess, are unfortunately a part of this process. I'd like to do away with them completely and just have town-to-town discussions, but it's probably going to be viewed to be unrealistic. But, you know, in the interim, I mean, I'm doing Medicare town hall meetings all over the state. We've got three planned. I've invited Mike to participate, since we have such a different perspective on Medicare. You know, his efforts to want to privatize it and turn it into a voucher, and my efforts to want to expand it and maintain it, you know, are completely at the opposite ends of the sort of approach. And I would hope we'd get an opportunity to have an honest discussion outside of the big money ads with the people of South Dakota, because it's important. We got 140,000 people in South Dakota that are on Medicare. They don't want it changed. You know, they like it, and they wouldn't give it up for anything. I think you've followed the race enough to know I've been suggesting that giving people an opportunity to buy into Medicare versus buying private health insurance would be a good way to strengthen Medicare, but also to make health insurance, whether it's Medicare or private insurance, more affordable. I would love to have an honest, open debate about that with Mike Rounds. I mean, he comes from the insurance industry. He understands it. I'd love to have a discussion with him about it.
Are we going to see those discussions, or do you think we're going to see Rick Weiland out going town to town and Mike Rounds communicating in a different way? David?
I think Mike Rounds is going to continue doing exactly what he's doing. You know, he'll do some retail politicking around the state, spend a lot of money on TV, and generally try to avoid making any mistakes. but I guess I can cut in for just a minute.
Yeah, go ahead.
The Argus leader just confirmed a minute ago some big news related to the South Dakota Senate race, that Annette Bosworth has just turned herself into the Minnehaha County Jail on an issuance of a warrant for her arrest on for a perjury charge related to her election petition. Marty Jackley issued that. Attorney General Marty Jackley issued the warrant this morning, and she has apparently just turned herself in.
And so this is related when she admitted to you, David, that her sister's signature was on it. Is that what this is related to? Do you know?
Probably. Related to the fact that she was in the Philippines during a time when she signed under oath documents saying that she had witnessed and people signing signatures here in the United States. And she confirmed at least one specific instance of that involving her sister. We're still waiting for more details, trying to get the specific court documents. But Marty Jackley had said that he wasn't going to do anything while a candidate was still on the ballot, and he didn't wait very long after Bosworth was no longer on the ballot.
Professor Caribou?
And we have the full story on ArgusLeader.com.
Okay, perfect. Thanks, David. Professor Caribou, have you has this happened before?
Not that I'm aware of, although I've been following this story all along, and I think it really does highlight that there needs to be a greater amount of time between when the petitions get turned in and the deadlines for, you know, printing the ballots and that kind of thing occur, because people have been aware of this problem for a couple months now, but they couldn't do anything about it before the primary because there just wasn't enough time. And think of what a mess this would be if Bosworth had actually won the primary. So I think we need to change some laws in here in this state to make it so that these kinds of challenges can actually occur before a primary election occurs.
Okay, we will continue our conversation. We need to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation about Annette Bosworth, and we'll also hear from former U.S. Senator Larry Pressler. And welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Kara Hetland sitting in today for Carl Gerke. And Denise Ross, we took a break before you were able to comment.
Well, I think the professor summed it up fairly well. I mean, there's a competition between inviting people into the process and encouraging participation in the political process. And sometimes you have trouble recruiting candidates to run in a race. So you want to keep that process open, but then you do need the officials in the Secretary of State's office, and in this case, the Attorney General's office, do need time to review issues that arise. And, you know, the issue of what is the process is something that can often rear its head in ways that we don't ever expect. And so you just have to I think Marty Jackley, I will say, handled this appropriately. I think it would have been much messier had she been the winner. But, you know, I think he did the right thing. Let the election process play itself out. Now the law enforcement process will begin.
And what kind of charges, what kind of, penalty is there for this?
The perjury charge is a Class 6 felony,
okay.
Which I believe has a maximum sentence of a year or two in prison, and along with a fine. She's also facing charges for election law-related issues, and I'm not sure exactly if there's other things. The warrant was for the perjury. She was released on a personal recognizance bond. She basically had turned herself in, was processed, and released, and will have to appear in Hughes County Court for an appearance at some point in the future.
Okay. Well, this will play out, and it'll take some time during the election cycle as well. So let me ask you this. Before we hear from former Senator Pressler, let me ask you this. Can there be a real challenge against Mike Rounds? Is there a chance for another candidate? And what role does the independents have in this race?
I shall take that. I think it's, as the professor said, it's Rounds is the favorite, probably a 90% chance that he wins, but 90% is not 100%. With two independents in the race and national money and a national environment, there's a chance that things could go differently from Rounds' plan. He's had sort of a charmed political life, even through winning two statewide elections, a number of legislative elections, and now this primary. Rounds has never had to face a determined, well-funded, negative attack campaign. Voters who generally like Mike Rounds have never don't have that opinion tested by a barrage of negative TV ads. So before you put the crown on Mike Rounds' head as the next senator, you got to see how he takes the punch and how his image holds up to that first barrage. If possible, that a successful attack barrage could severely weaken him and open the race up to make it closer, allow the independents in the race to take enough votes away, and potentially open it up for Rick Wyland to win. It's a very long shot, but it's Mike Rounds is almost certainly going to be the next senator. Yeah, it's an almost, and there's a pathway for Wyland there if he does everything right and gets lucky along the way.
Well, and let's hear from former U.S. Senator Larry Pressler. He spoke earlier today with SDPB's Keely Boltina.
Yes, I think if we send a traditional Republican or Democrat down to Washington, we'll continue building the deficit, because the military-industrial state and the lobbyist state is so powerful that they give all this money, and therefore they're the ones who are for corporate welfare and for big spending. I support ending some of the tax loopholes and deductions, and I also support a possible tax increase on the very wealthy and on very wealthy estates. And that may sound revolutionary, but I think we have to, until we get the deficit under control, we have to both reduce spending and enhance revenue. and we can best reduce spending by cutting back on a lot of our bases overseas. I was a Fulbright professor in Italy, right next to an American Army base, which is just a complete waste of money. And we should either relocate that back into the United States, where it will stimulate our own economy, or we should close it. But there's so many ways we could reduce spending. We can modernize our military, but we also need to spend on good things here at home in the United States for our own people. We need to keep Obamacare and fix it. We need to work on education, teacher pay, and students' loans. We need to raise the minimum wage. We need to talk about issues in this campaign. I hope we have debates, and I hope one of my contributions will be to make this a more issue-oriented campaign.
And now that all of the Senate candidates have been figured out, you're not looking at five potential Republicans. You now know which one, and you know which Democrat and another independent. Does it change your campaign at all, or does the campaign strategy for Pressler stay the same?
No, it doesn't. I announced on my election day that I would have to run a low-budget campaign, and I asked the public's understanding of that. I won't be able to run a lot of ads, but I need the public's understanding. The public has to wake up. I was disappointed that there wasn't a bigger percentage voting in the primaries yesterday, but I think it's because there's so much apathy, or they feel that they don't have a choice. As I said in my announcement, I want to give the people a choice to vote for an issues-oriented candidate who's for reducing the deficit and helping our people, but also who would go to Washington and know how to function in a closely divided Senate as an independent and bring power to that Senate seat for the people of South Dakota.
Former U.S. Senator Larry Pressler speaking early today with SDPB's Keely Boltina. And the independent factor, is that who is that most likely to take votes away from, if at all?
I think you could say in this race that because both Gordon Howey and Larry Pressler were Republicans and have been Republicans for most of their career, that you're looking that those would take votes away from the Republican candidate, who is Mike Rounds.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so. Any chance at all? I received a rather lengthy email from a listener in Custer. I won't read the whole thing, but the gist of it is, any chance that we'll ever in South Dakota see an open primary? Not having the opportunity to vote for candidates in all kinds of races, sheriff, county commission, to U.S. Senate, you would have to declare yourself a Republican, and that's not something this person really wants to do.
Yeah, I had the same experience. I went in, and I should know better. If anybody should know better, it should be me. But I was expecting to vote. I live out in Rapid City, and I was expecting to vote in the local Pennington County races because you think in your mind that April and June are the elections for those local offices. But as it turns out, those were Republican primary races. So I walked in as an independent, and I got – the Democrats do have an open primary, so I got handed the Democratic ballot and voted in that race. And I was really hoping to vote for the local races, but I didn't get that opportunity, so I empathize.
Any chance that we're going to see open primaries on the Republican side?
I think it's highly unlikely. The Republicans have no incentive. Generally speaking – the closed primary strengthens the party structure and organization, whereas open primaries have a potential to bring outsiders into supporting individual candidates at the expense of the party's control and strength. And with Republicans in such a strong position in South Dakota, there's no incentive for them to open up their primaries, weakening their own party for the sake of giving candidates a very minor boost that they don't really need.
Let's talk a little bit about voter turnout. Relatively low.
Well, not that low, given that it is a primary election, and it's certainly an off-year election, although certainly lower than the Secretary of State predicted, although I was looking at his numbers, and I'm just not even sure where that 50% came from. But, I guess I wouldn't say I was surprised or dismayed by the turnout, given that it's off year and it's a primary election.
Okay. And did a lot of people, do you think, just figured it was a done deal?
Well, and as Denise pointed out, if you're a registered Democrat or an independent, there was only one race on the ballot. Right. So it's not surprising that independents and Democrats especially didn't turn out to vote.
All right, so history was made in the governor's race, and first female from a major political party nominated. How big of a deal do you think this is going to be nationally or just within the state?
Nationally, I don't think this is going to make much of an impact. South Dakota was one of a minority of states, I think 10 before yesterday, that had never nominated a woman for governor. We have nominated and elected women to Congress, notably the House of Representatives. Locally, it's going to be a factor in the race, probably not a deciding factor in a race where Governor Dugard and the Republicans have all the advantages. But I think there's probably a number of voters in South Dakota, particularly female voters, who are going to have a little extra desire to see a woman get elected governor of South Dakota. I remember back in 2010 when Chris Nelson was running against Kristi Noem and Blake Curd in the Republican House primary, that after the election, Nelson admitted to me that in those final weeks of the campaign, some voters and activists came up to him and told him, "Chris, we really like you, but we really think we just need a woman." For the race. As much as maybe people like to think that people make their decisions just based on the issues, this matters for some people, and I don't think it's going to be a huge deal, but I think it'll have a role.
I am. We're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue to talk about the gubernatorial race in South Dakota and yesterday's decisions. You're listening to Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. And welcome back to Dakota Midday here on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Kara Hetland filling in today for Carl Gerke, who is on vacation. And we are spending the hour talking with our Dakota political junkies, Denise Ross, the web editor for the Mitchell Daily Republic, and David Montgomery, the political reporter for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. And also joining us is Pam Caribou, who is a political science professor at Black Hills State University. We're talking about Susan Wismer and having the first female candidate for governor in South Dakota from a major political party. I am wondering, want your reaction about, can you go negative in this race, do you think?
That's what I was wondering. If having a female candidate running as a Democrat against a male candidate running as a Republican, if that would affect the tone of the campaign on either side. And I think if the race were closer, where we, you know, they actually had to do some tussling, we could see an effect perhaps. But given that Dugard seems to be a fairly safe candidate, I think he can, you know, act like Rounds has in this primary election and just step above it and just kind of coast almost again to win in the general election without having to get into any kind of scrap with a female candidate.
David, any thoughts?
One of the things, in order to really go negative, Susan Winter is going to have money. And to date, she hasn't had any. Her pre-primary fundraising report was pretty pathetic, all things considered, in terms of the amount of money raised, especially compared to Dugard. And the U.S. Senate race is going to be buying up a lot of the airtime around the state. So she's going to have to get some serious cash if she wants to be able to even have the option to go negative, even if she doesn't, regardless of whether or not she wants to.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit. We're going to hear from Susan Wismer. She held a conference call this morning, and she basically is talking about it's time for term limits with the governor's office. So here she is from this morning, Susan Wismer on term limits.
You know, this state is a state that has really gotten behind term limits for legislators and seems to have continued support for that. And my theme throughout this year is going to be that we haven't had any sort of effective term limit in the executive branch in South Dakota for 35 years. We've had the same party in power, a lot of the same people get carried over from one administration to the next. And it's gotten to the point where there are either a lot of parties excluded from the conversation, from policy conversations, or else even people who are invited to the table aren't free to say what is really in the best interest of their constituents because of the overwhelming power and longstanding power of the Republican Party in the executive branch.
Is that gonna fly? Is that argument gonna fly in South Dakota, Denise Ross?
I don't know. I think that I think that's long. You've long heard that from Democrats, especially Democrats who've served in the legislature and have seen that up close. I mean, she's correct. There are people who have worked in that state capitol building and in those state offices for decades long careers. That doesn't mean that they're bad state employees. It just means that they are the ones making the decision and the decisions, and they've been doing that for a long time. She talked a lot about a lot of different things that she has been talking about throughout the primary, about the low education funding, South Dakota's low teacher pay by $10,000 per teacher, the Medicaid expansion that the Democrats wanted and the Dugard administration blocked, and how that's affecting hospitals and nursing homes and then the people who work there and how much they're getting paid. And she's got a very, it's actually a pretty tight message. She's got a few issues that she's running on: the education funding, the Medicaid funding, the budget cuts that Dugard instituted during his first year in office. And so when you start talking about the whole gender dynamic, it doesn't seem to resonate with me, because she's talking about very specific policy decisions that were made as a legislator. And if you think about Dennis Dugard, he's such a very thoughtful, reflective person. Even when you see him on TV, he'll get asked a question and he'll take a moment and think about it before he answers it. And so these kind of aren't your two typical candidates running for office. Yes, there's a male and a female, but they have their own very specific styles of communicating, and I just don't see the whole gender thing coming into play. They're going to be talking about policy issues, I think.
David, how important is her selection for a running mate? Will it make a difference?
It rarely ever does, whether in South Dakota or even national politics for president. She's got a choice about she can choose a running mate to either the two general choices are to reinforce her strengths or to compensate for her weaknesses. She could choose someone from a different part of the state, from Sioux Falls or Rapid City, to get more appeal in an area that she's not from. She could choose a male candidate if she wants balance there, or she could double down by choosing a female candidate to highlight the differences there. But generally speaking, lieutenant governor running mates in South Dakota tend not to be very well known, certainly outside of their areas, and they're highly unlikely to bring many votes along with them. So at best, it could make a difference in the margins if the race ended up being extremely close, but it's probably not going to have a huge difference.
I wanted to take just a couple of minutes, and there is an independent in this race, too, Michael Myers, and he spoke earlier today with SDPB's Keely Boltina.
One of the first things I will do as governor is to appoint a consumer advocate to oversee the Division of Insurance to review those increases in premiums. The second thing I intend to do is to appoint a independent special prosecutor to take a look at that EB-5 issue. And, of course, it may well have been a suicide, and we may finally locate those millions of dollars in missing monies. So we need some. We need an independent special prosecutor, because currently under the system, they're basically investigating themselves. And then, Keeley, I want to take a look at the Medicaid expansion. Those are three issues that I believe that current Governor Dennis Dugard and Susan ought to take a look at and ask them whether they're willing to appoint that special independent prosecutor. Are they interested in appointing a consumer advocate to oversee those insurance premiums? And let's revisit Medicaid expansion with an emphasis on long-term care. I believe we have, the people of South Dakota have a nice choice. Governor Dugard, Susan Wismer, and now, for the first time, an independent, Michael Myers.
And the governor talked a little bit last night. He says that he wants the campaign to be focused on issues. Susan Wismer has talked about she wants the campaign to be focused on issues. And you certainly are not shying away from the issues, too. So does the fact that now you know officially which candidates you're up against change the course of your campaign over the next 5 months?
Not really, because I'll be going once again, it will be an issue-driven campaign. And not driven by upfront party construct. So I think as an independent, I have greater flexibility in just going after the issues. And I would agree with Governor Dugard. I'm more than happy to discuss those issues and see whether you would agree on taking some of the steps that I'm recommending.
With Michael Myers' experience in healthcare, I'm wondering what kind of if he can drive that issue and educate voters, educate maybe his opponents on some of that. Do you think he'll have an impact, David?
I think independents very rarely have a big impact. The general rule is they sometimes pull well months away from the election, but as the election gets closer, their support diminishes and voters go back to the minor party candidates. Myers has a long record of experience in business, teaching, all sorts of areas, medicine, and it could very well affect the debate, but I think it's unlikely to affect the result.
I think David's correct in this, but while third-party candidates very rarely can actually win an election, one thing that they can do, the political science research shows, that they can push the two main party candidates further apart. And so for both the Senate race and for the governor's race, to have third-party candidates, it may actually affect the messages of the Democratic and Republican candidates. And I think that could be very interesting. The two main party candidates can't sit in the middle and be centrists as easily when there are third-party candidates.
Because is typically the independent candidate more in the middle?
Not typically, but if it is a centrist third-party candidate, then that's what happens. They push them apart. Sometimes third-party candidates are even further to the right or the left, and then they don't have that same effect.
Let's see. We have about 5 minutes left. There is an interesting race for state representative, Phil Jensen, the Republican representative, and his challenger, David Johnson. Only 30 votes separate the two of those. That race has been flagged for a possible recount. Any thoughts, any conversation about that race?
Kara, when I saw the results last night, and I don't think they were complete, it showed that Phil Jensen had the lower vote total. Is that still the way that those numbers look this morning?
No.
Yes. Do you know?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. Well, he's the incumbent. Phil Jensen is the incumbent. He's from out here in Rapid City, and he is very conservative. He's the legislator who introduced the bill that would have, and it failed, but it would have allowed businesses to not serve gay couples for any reason, and that got quite a bit of national attention. It extended out to saying it didn't just specifically, the language didn't just specifically address gay and lesbian couples. It talked about the right to refuse service to anyone for any reason, which would have opened up, you know, people to do it on racist grounds or anti-Semitic grounds or whatnot. And it caused quite a bit of attention nationally. Mm-hmm. That's who Phil Jensen is. And it's interesting that he's having trouble after all that from the legislative session.
Just a small correction. It's showing that Phil Jensen is the one that has 30 more votes.
Oh, yes, 30
than
more.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Okay. I didn't know that.
I didn't have that open either.
That's a very Republican district, but Democrats had made sure to nominate a candidate there basically on in case Jensen won his primary. So I think Democrats are going to see a chance here to snag a Republican seat in the Senate. It's by no means assured a victory because it's a very Republican district, but there's probably some moderates in that district who are willing to vote for and support a Democrat there, at least for 2 years, viewing that, thinking they can come back in 2 years and retake it with a more moderate Republican.
There were some very lively Cracker Barrel sessions out here in Rapid City during the legislative session, mm-hmm. And Phil Jensen was in the middle of it, and people in the audience were challenging him frequently, and it got very lively. We have good Cracker Barrels out here anyway, but those were especially lively.
I want to take a step back and ask again about Annette Bosworth and turning herself in on perjury charges. And if convicted, is this kind of the end of her political career?
It's the end of her electoral career. Okay. I don't think she's going to get elected anything herself, although you never know. people have made comebacks from worse charges in the past. But I think she could still stay active. She announced yesterday that she's going to create a political action committee. She's got a large network of supporters, people who liked her Facebook page, who donated money to her in her campaign, that she can tap for this, as well as possibly appeal to them to donate to a legal defense fund. So she could try to stay active, try to pitch this as a politically motivated prosecution, which she already did, accusing Marty Jackley of going after her for political reasons rather than in pursuit of a genuine crime. She could fight this and stay active politically, but it's hard to see her having any shot of actually getting elected anything herself if convicted of this.
And Professor Caravu, you suggested earlier on that we might, do you think we'll see changes in our election laws in South Dakota?
I think it's possible, given that there were a couple problems with petitions that were submitted for the Senate race, both for the Republican candidate, and actually, I believe there was an independent candidate also that had some mm-hmm. ballot issues. But just as a side note, I see that Dr. Bosworth earned about 6% of the Republican mm-hmm. primary votes, but I believe a lot of her support, both on her Facebook page and economically, came from people outside the state. And if that's the case, then I'm not sure whether that support will actually translate into political support within the state if she runs for another election.
All right. Thank you. I want to thank all three of you for being on the program today. We are out of time. Denise Ross, the web editor for the Mitchell Daily Republic, David Montgomery, the political reporter for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, and also Pam Caravu, who's a political science professor at Black Hills State University. Thanks so much for taking your time today and joining the conversation.